Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of March 2016. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Cowger. He's at Heartland Farm Partners out of Hutchinson, Minnesota. And then a bit later in the program, we'll take a look at the cash grain market with the folks at the Andersons facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. That's their ethanol climbers plant. And as we close out our half hour together, we'll discuss the weather forecast too with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Along the way, we'll check in on the agricultural news for the afternoon, and I'll tell you a bit more about the acquisition of Hagee Manufacturing yesterday by John Deere right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here's what the numbers look like in Chicago for this Friday, rather Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were down 6 cents today. Nearby May at $3.67, July at $3.71.5, 5 3/4 lower. September down 5 3/4 at $3.76, and December corn down 5.5 cents at $3.84. The March contract 3.92 3/4 finished 5 1/4 lower. Soy complex nearby beans at 7 cents lower, $9.09 in the May contract. July at $9.16 1/4 down 6.5. August 6 1/4 lower at 9.18 1/2. November beans at 9.23 down 5.5 cents. January futures of next year down 5 1/4 at $9.26 1/2. Bean meal down $1.30 at $2.71.90. Bean oil at $33.79, 26 cents lower. May futures in the wheat pit, that's soft red, 4.64 down 12 3/4 of a cent. July down 12 1/4 at $4.71 1/2. And the hard red July at $4.77 down 15 3/4. Live cattle futures for the day. Nearby contract April at $132.32 1/2, down $2.52 1/2. June at $123.05, down $2.47 1/2. April feeders $151.92 1/2, $4.15 lower. The May at $150.30, down $4.47 1/2. Lean hogs April contract $69. They finished down $1.25, are currently trading that. May contract at $77.30 on my quotes, down $1.55. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may always find it at willag.org.
Support for WILL comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Through expert advice and tailored solutions, Busey helps homebuyers achieve the dream of home ownership. Busey, your dream, our promise.
Here's what some of the outside markets look like at this hour. The nearby contract for crude oil at $38.37 a barrel, 9 cents higher for the day. Ethanol futures at $1.45 5/10. That's up 0.6 cents. Gasoline on the RBOB, $1.43 1/2, 1 1/8 cents lower. Heating oil, April contract, $1.16 4/10. That's diesel fuel, 0.8 cents higher. And natural gas up 1 3/10 at $1.99 4/10. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,626. That's 88 points higher. The U.S. dollar down 0.321 at 94.825. And the gold futures on the day at $1,228.60, down $7.20. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Scattered showers, some thunderstorms, then showers likely, possibly a thunderstorm or two after 3 o'clock. Cloudy and a high of 63 degrees today. Breezy out there at 20 to 23 miles an hour out of the winds, out of the south, gusting to 33. Chance of rainfall this afternoon, 60% in the area. Tonight, occasional showers, low of 58, but we do have a 90% chance of rainfall. We'll gust those winds all the way to 34 miles per hour this evening. Then tomorrow, showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 1 in the afternoon. Otherwise, partly sunny and a high of 70 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner, as usual, on a Wednesday afternoon. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this 30th day of March. It's a Wednesday afternoon. Dan Cowger now joins us. He's with Heartland Farm Partners out of Hutchison, Minnesota. Dan, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule today. I do appreciate you being with us. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Heartland Farm Partners and what you do in Hutchison, Minnesota?
Heartland Farm Partners That is a full-service grain marketing company. We work with farmers primarily for corn, beans, and wheat. We work with farmers individually. We believe that the same risk management or the same marketing program doesn't necessarily fit each person's needs. So we sit down with farmers on a one-on-one basis to develop a personalized marketing service for their needs.
And where is Hutchison located?
Hutchison is about an hour west of Minneapolis in south-central Minnesota. So we're just north of the heart of the Minnesota corn and bean growing region.
All right. Now let's talk a little bit about the numbers as they traded today. This was an interesting trading day, particularly because it's the day before a USDA report, one of the largest report days of the year with the acreage and the grain stocks numbers out. However, futures started lower in the wheat pit this morning, and then it got a bit contagious. What happened in the early and overnight trades?
The overnight trade was very quiet, but today is the third day in a row where the weather models are indicating a potential, not just a rain event, but a possible pattern change and much better precipitation chances in the southwestern plains where it's been very dry recently. And being that today was the third day in a row that the models are picking up on this change, when the wheat market failed to move higher and take out the highs from Monday or Tuesday, we started to see some selling, and that somewhat snowballed. Wheat led the break to the downside, and then corn and beans followed suit as went through the morning hours.
Yeah, so wheat futures in the soft or hard red July, which would be what was most impacted by the weather forecast, down 15¾ cents for that harvest month. You say it spilled over into the soybeans. Soybeans have been very strong for the last month or so, a 7-cent loss. Do you see that as just marking time and waiting for tomorrow morning's USDA report?
Yeah, the soybean market has found strength. Initially it was short covering a couple of weeks ago, but the funds have recently got long in the soybean market. The funds are trend followers. So with the trend being up now in the soybeans, at least over the last 2 to 3 weeks, they've continued to add to that long position. And palm oil, being very strong throughout much of the month of March, has also been one of the contributing factors towards the rally in soybeans here over the last 3 weeks.
What are the other contributing factors in your mind?
I think that primarily it was short covering. The fundamental picture really hasn't changed. We still have a demand structure in the United States that does not look like we're going to be seeing a substantial increase in demand. We still have very large crops coming in out of South America. Argentina harvest is beginning. It looks like yields there are very, very good. And so we're really not seeing much of a fundamental change for soybeans. We still have surplus supplies, U.S. and globally. So most of the rally is likely due to short covering initially and then chart-based buying by the funds and the money managers. And then the rally in the palm oil market probably contributed to some of that with that rallying the soybean oil market and then beans as well.
Your geographic location tells me that you probably deal with a number of Minnesota and Iowa farmers. Can we talk about Minnesota, maybe those northern Iowa farmer areas in particular? Oftentimes here in our part of the world, we're discussing how much grain they really have on hand, how many bins they've built over the last 5 years, and sometimes we hear they have 1, 2, sometimes 3 years worth of corn stored. What does your assessment of their current situation tell you about it?
You know, we have more grain stocks on farm than we would typically this time of year. I think that as the markets have broken to new lows, both in 2015 and now into 2016, the farmers are somewhat reluctant to sell, and therefore they're holding a larger amount of grain than they may have over the high-priced years that we saw a few years ago. but it is really different from one farm to the next. Some farmers are very heavily sold, and they pretty much cleaned up most of their old crop, while others are holding a large percentage of last year's crop, still hoping that maybe weather will turn threatening and we'll get a big rally this summer. But in general, larger stocks being held in for both corn and beans, but it's really different from one producer to another.
What did you tell producers, and we'll come back to the soybeans, to do, if anything, on old crop this rally with the beans?
We have advised them to sell at a minimum any bushels that they have to be priced between now and the end of May. That gives us about 60 days for a possible weather scenario to develop. So if they would have any bushels on hand, we've advised them to get those bushels priced through May. And then if they have a few bushels they want to hold on a chance for a summer weather scare, June, July, or August, that's fine. But at a minimum, we were advising guys to get all bushels through May sold that have to be priced.
And then looking forward for new crop, both corn and soybeans, are you friendly, neutral, bearish, or just simply waiting for tomorrow's USDA report?
Well, USDA's report tomorrow is likely to give us some type of a reaction. It could be bullish or bearish, although typically when you go into a report with the markets at the upper end of a range, sometimes that means that that you need bullish news to keep the rally going. Without that bullish news, you know, the markets may just slip back within their trading range. Longer term, without a weather issue, we think that corn and beans both have substantial downside risk. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't get rallies. We're typically going to have some rallies when we have some weather scares. For instance, last year, we had the exceptionally heavy rains in June and even extended into early July that gave the markets a nice, let's call it a weather scare from a national perspective. Now, if you lived in those areas where they had the heavy rains and flooding, it was more than a weather scare. But from a national perspective, it was somewhat of a weather scare, given the fact that we still had very, very good corn and bean yields from a national average last year. And so we'll have some rallies, but it's going to be very difficult to sustain those rallies this year unless a weather scare becomes a more significant weather issue that would substantially reduce yield.
Dan, thanks for taking the time with us. I do appreciate you joining us from your office there in Hutchinson, Minnesota.
Thanks a lot.
Dan Kalger is with Heartland Farm Partners. Joins us on the closing market report for this Wednesday afternoon. In today's agricultural news, some state officials recently told a U.S. Senate panel that the Environmental Protection Agency has been moving too quickly and without enough state oversight on clean water, clean air, and other rules. Many states are now suing the Environmental Protection Agency, and that's delaying some of the imposition of the rules. Several state officials summed up their experience with the EPA as too much, too fast, and not enough cooperation regarding recent rulemaking. South Dakota's Environment and Natural Resources Secretary Steve Perner is among those officials who have succeeded in halting the waters of the U.S. rule, at least for now.
The rule has faced substantial opposition in South Dakota, and we joined a lawsuit with 12 other states to block the rule. Upon joining the challenge, South Dakota Attorney General Marty Jackley was quoted as saying, "The EPA is overstepping its congressional authority and seizing rights specifically reserved to the states."
Arkansas Environmental Quality Director Becky Keough says they need more time.
"We have more on our plate than we can say grace over. The sheer number of mandates and deadlines, further complicated by the complexity of the rules, leaves us in a position where being served appetizer, soup, salad, main course, and dessert all at the same time. And if we do not clean our crumbs, we are banished from the table."
Perner argues that EPA has been after much smaller problems that will produce questionable benefits and less public support, like the waters of the U.S. rule, compared to past laws enacted to keep the environment clean. Let's stay with states as they contend with some federal policies and will move to GMO labeling, as food companies are preparing to comply with the Vermont GMO labeling law. Many other states are now considering their own GMO labeling laws. Politico reports Connecticut, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island are looking to implement their own GMO labeling statutes. Those bills largely mirror the Vermont law. Meanwhile, lawmakers in Maine passed a bill through the state's House of Representatives that would ask voters to repeal a trigger clause in the state's GMO labeling law, allowing the measure to go into effect. Legislators in Tennessee, Florida, Hawaii, Missouri, New Hampshire, New Jersey, New York, and Oregon have also considered labeling laws this spring. Lawmakers in Alaska and Mississippi have considered restrictions on the sale and cultivation of GMO salmon. On the other side of the GMO battle, Kansas, Missouri, and Wyoming lawmakers have looked at resolutions that would urge the U.S. Congress to block labeling. On that note about food, let's check to see what consumers have to say. A new study shows 2/3 of consumers believe agricultural and food companies are transparent. The study by Sullivan, Higdon, and Sink's Food Think Initiative found consumers also want to know more about where their food comes from. The study found consumer perceptions of transparency in the industry are growing as more consumers turn to food companies and grocers for information regarding their food. Researchers found 65% of consumers think it's important to know how their food is produced, while 60% think farmers and ranchers are trustworthy, making them one of the most trusted sources for information on food production. The research was conducted earlier this year from the responses for more than 2,000 U.S. consumers. We'll come back now to a couple of production agriculture-related stories responding to concerns by U.S. lawmakers. Syngenta says the takeover by ChemChina of Syngenta poses no food or national security issues. Ag professional reports Syngenta made the response following the concerns in a letter by four senators requesting the Committee on Foreign Investment review the $43 billion deal's potential impact on the U.S. food system. The senators feared that increased foreign control over important parts of U.S. food production could create threats to domestic food security. A Syngenta spokesperson responded by saying while the company would welcome a full review, it believes the proposed takeover would not pose any security or food safety issues. And finally, John Deere has acquired the majority ownership of Hagie Manufacturing, the U.S. market leader in U.S. high-clearance sprayers. Deere announced the joint venture yesterday while saying Hagie will continue to produce sprayers at its Iowa facility. More from Hagie on this in just a moment. Yesterday, you may recall that I had hoped to talk with somebody from Hagie, and I didn't get a chance to because they called just before I went on the air for the closing market report. However, just after the closing market report, I did discuss the acquisition of Hagie by John Deere with a communications specialist at Hagie. She's located in Clarion, Iowa. I talked with Amber Kohlhouse. Here's a portion of our conversation. I think you'll find it of interest. Did John Deere seek out Hagie, or did Hagie seek out John Deere?
John Deere sought out Hagie.
Okay, well, that answers my question, which is, did the downturn have any input on the Hagie side? But if John Deere came to you, they were just looking to fill in. They were looking to put the best product into their lineup because they had a gap.
From the Hagie standpoint, I know one of the things that made this very appealing was that, you know, a lot of people, I think, are going to take this announcement with the assumption that we're going to become John Deere and we're going to have a green sprayer. And actually, that couldn't be more opposite from the truth. John Deere basically wants to have the Hagie as part of the gap in their product portfolio that will give them an immediate way to provide growers with a need that's out there rather than taking however many years it would take for them if they decided to enter into this market because it's something that's new for them. And, you know, they already look to Hagie to be an expert in high clearance applications. So rather than reinventing the wheel, you know, looked at it and said, why don't we just work together?
One final thing, Amber. I listened to the John Deere Way, the book, and then I read a little bit about your history online. In your culture segment, right? How closely do you think the two cultures, John Deere and Hagie, or did Alan talk to you about this at all, about the cultures being similar in the way they approach their customers and their product lines and the pride they have in their product lines?
So actually this morning, I thought it was very neat. We had a meeting here with all of our employees. Alan addressed the audience along with several representatives from John Deere that were on site to, you know, explain why we decided to move forward with this. And it was really neat because they put up, Heggy has four values that we use. And when they put those up on the screen and then they put John Deere's four values up, they walked side by side between them and they were pretty transparent and pretty relevant to each other. So when you look at those, you can tell that both of the companies live every day by the same philosophies. And so that's something that, you know, is comforting. I think when you're, you know, anytime that you're looking at partnering with somebody, you want it to be of common mind. And so that's something that you know, they will continue to utilize, we will continue to utilize. And I know with Alan, you know, he's very excited about this because Heggy gets to stay Heggy. And we are known for having a really unique culture here, and that is absolutely something that John Deere wants to make sure that we preserve. I think that is something that, like you said, employees and the team members that are here pride themselves on the products that we make. And the reason that we're able to be successful that way is because Heggy has been for so many years a company that truly takes care of their people and puts their employees first. And so that's absolutely something that is going to continue going forward.
Amber Kohlhaus works for Heggy Manufacturing. She's located in Clarion, Iowa. John Deere acquired a majority interest in the company yesterday. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Matt Eberle now joins us. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility outside of Logansport, Indiana. Hi, Matt. Thanks for being with us. Can you tell me a little bit about your background to begin with, please, who you are and where you came from?
Yes, sir. My name is Matt Eberle. I'm an account rep here at the Anderson's and Climbers. I'm originally from the great state of Ohio, Maumee, Ohio, to be exact. Been here with the Andersons for 2.5-3 years and started out as a trainee going around and learning the industry, and I'm excited to be here. Been out here since August.
All right. Tell me about conditions on the ground. Have you been taking much corn in the Climbers facility for ethanol? Doing well?
Yes, sir. Things are going well. You know, lines here have been smooth. We've been busy, but nothing outrageous. It's been moving pretty good. Good movement here with basis staying pretty strong here for the time being. I think all eyes are kind of pointing to the report coming up here tomorrow at noon.
Yeah, so what do you think about that report? Or you have any expectations at this time?
No really expectations. Be interested to see what the trade comes out with. You know, we're sitting here, predictions are asking for more acreage in both corn and beans. They're looking for around a 90 million corn, about 83 beans. That's up about 3 million in corn from 15 and about 2 from last year in beans. So, you know, it's a big report. It's going to have a lot of impact on this market. So we'll have to definitely keep an eye on it and see where she takes us.
Hey, thanks so much, Matt.
All right, have a good one.
Matt Eberle is with the Andersons, joins us on the closing market report from Illinois Public Media. Tomorrow morning, don't forget to visit our website at 11 o'clock. We'll have all those numbers from the report in my Twitter feed at Commodity Week.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
It's National Hot Dog Day. As of 2006, the world's longest hot dog checked in at almost 197 feet. The dog was prepared for the 50th anniversary for the All Japan Bread Association. And yes, the mammoth dog had a bun to match. On this day in agricultural history in 1674, Jethro Tull was baptized, an English writer and pioneer agronomist. He invented a horse-drawn three-row seed planting drill around 1701. He also promoted sowing seeds in rows rather than scattering them around so that weeds could be controlled by regular cultivation. His seed drill is often considered the first agricultural machine in history. Its rotary mechanism set the standard for all sowing devices that followed. In 1843, Napoleon E. Gouin received the first U.S. patent for an egg incubator. It used steam heat to warm the eggs. In 1899, American inventor James Ricks was issued a patent for improvements in the rough shoeing of horses. His creation was an overshoe or sleet shoe clamped with a wire band over the ordinary shoe. The design gave the horse extra traction on slippery surfaces. And in 1911, Ellen Swallow Richards died. She was one of the founders of the home economics movement in the U.S., as well as the first woman faculty member at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, where she developed a new curriculum in air, water, and sewage chemistry. And that's a look at this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson. Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon, the 30th day of March. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated joins us to discuss the weather forecast. Drew, thanks for being with us. Tell me a little bit about the weather forecast for the next week, and then look out maybe a week after that. Around the 8th and 9th, producers tend to get itchy and really want to get started planting corn in a large part of the state of Illinois and Indiana, and I would think Missouri and parts of Iowa, too. What kind of conditions do you see?
Well, it looks as though we're going to see quite a mix of weather. As we move forward through this next week to 10 days, we do have a storm that, of course, is moving through the region over the next day and a half, and we will see widespread precipitation. And today's midday forecast model run suggested that greater rains would occur a little bit further to the north into southern Illinois and southern Indiana and southeastern Missouri. So probably going to see some heavier amounts of moisture there. Certainly more than an inch will occur, if not a couple of inches, near the Ohio River. So that's not necessarily a good bit of news. Once that system passes off to the east, which will probably take place as we get out onto Thursday and Friday, we'll look for cooler air pushing into the region. The cooler air will be drier, but also brings frost and freeze potentials into the lower Midwest. There should not be anything that's seriously threatening to the winter wheat crop, but we will continue to watch that. But it will be dry, and will probably stay dry on into at least the middle part of next week, with only a few spits and spats of moisture possible. The earliest that we would see another storm system would probably come at the end of next week, and more likely in that second weekend of the two-week outlook. And then I think we'll start a bit of a wetter biased pattern. So once we get beyond today and tomorrow, or tonight and tomorrow's storm, we'll have one more to deal with, but it's well over a week away. And so maybe some field work will likely take place during that time period.
Check in on the Delta region for me.
Boy, it's just wet down there. They've had a little bit of field work here recently in the northern parts of the Delta, but that's going to stop tonight as well, with some heavier rains likely to come into the region. The precipitation down that way will be probably greater than it will in the lower Ohio River Valley. We'll probably see some totals running anywhere from 2 to 3 inches in some locations from Arkansas into parts of Tennessee and immediate neighboring areas there. So that will be the end of the field work once we get to tonight, and we probably won't see another opportunity to get in those fields again until sometime midweek next week, probably.
Have you been keeping track of other parts of the world? For instance, what does China look like as it starts its growing season?
Well, everything looks pretty good for China. I don't have too many issues to deal with over there. There's a lot of rain in the Yangtze River Basin, which is kind of the southernmost parts of the production area. It's important for early season rice and early season corn, and so some of the crop there is not likely to be planted right away because it is so very wet across that region. But areas to the north, in the heart of their corn and soybean country, the soil is actually in very good shape right now. The soil temperatures are still too cool, but we're probably just a few weeks away from getting started with their planting as well. And it looks like they'll get off to a very good start.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being with us.
All right. You have a good day today.
You too. True Learner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.